Morning, everyone. Let's begin with a chant today. Rise in freedom. The words are, nothing on earth can hold me. Rise, O my soul, in freedom. Nothing to fear anymore. And as we're chanting, let's imagine that joyful offering of everything we are, our thoughts, our identities, our desires, our attachments, worldly, material attachments, as well as those attachments to our thoughts and our needs, offering them up joyfully into the divine. Nothing on earth can hold me.
Thank you.
Let's begin with a prayer. Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, humbly we bow at thy feet. Teach us to act with thy grace and thy will, that everything we do may affirm your consciousness, that everything we speak may affirm your love. Help us to uplift our thoughts and actions, that we may be channels of thy light, and that we may share thy light with all. Om. Peace. Amen. Good morning. You know, a few days ago, here we are, it's August of 2020 in the United States. We're in Palo Alto, California, and this coronavirus is still running rampant and just has taken over our lives in ways that we never really imagined. And my friend Shanti, who is one of the spiritual directors here, was listening to a news article the other day, and a doctor was commenting on how now, you know, almost 6 months later, 6 months into the way that this disease has just begun to run, or this virus has begun to run rampant through our communities and through our society. This doctor said, we are suffering from two viruses or two diseases. The first is the coronavirus, and the second is coronavirus fatigue or COVID fatigue. And that started to resonate because I've been reading a lot of articles in the news lately about people who are feeling just all done. I have a little niece. She's almost two. She's just about 1.5 years old. And my sister has taught her to sign. So now she's starting to get some words, but she still signs things. And she says, all done. And she just goes like this whenever she's done eating or done with an activity. And so I was thinking the other day when Shanti was telling me about that article that she'd listened to, or that news report that she'd listened to, I was thinking, here we are. We're just saying, all done. No more. And I was reading an article a few days ago about a religious organization, not here in California, but somewhere else, who they had gathered and were singing, and some similar to the ways that we would love to chant or sing our devotion to the divine. And of course, you can probably see where I'm going with this. The end result of that was that there was another little mini outbreak among all of the parishioners and the people who were there. And when I was listening to the article, you know, they were talking about the people were lamenting their cavalier attitude to an extent. So they were honoring that the mistakes had been made in that process. But underneath that, and though this isn't, they didn't say this and it wasn't quoted directly, I could feel that just that desire to worship the divine in the ways that we're used to doing it, and sort of lamenting or mourning the loss of not being able to sing to God, which was something that was a part of their congregation and the culture of their congregation. And here they were, and they did it, and it ended up with another little mini outbreak of this virus. And in the midst of that, the other thing that I felt, besides that mourning of the loss of the way that we divine, there was that little seed of ego consciousness, which is, but I was worshiping the divine. That little part of the ego that's saying, how could something bad happen? Here I was sharing my love with you, Divine Mother. I was sharing my love with God. How could something bad happen in the midst of that? And that made me start to think about divine grace and God's grace and the ways that divine grace weaves itself into our lives. And so often we tend to think that grace is something that's just placed in front of us in sort of a worldly circumstance, and to say, oh, divine grace can step in and change what's happening in this circumstance or in this situation. If, you know, I have a relative or a friend who is sick, maybe a miracle will happen and divine grace will heal him or her. Or perhaps if the circumstance, I want it to be changed, perhaps divine grace will come in and change the way that, you know, the circumstance is happening. And to an extent, that can happen, and we see it happen often. Those are what we call miracles in the world. But when I was thinking about that story that I was reading and this group of people who just wanted to worship the divine, I was thinking about where the grace is in that circumstance. And for them, and again, though they didn't say this outwardly, I was just thinking about it and reflecting on it. In that moment, it may have been the question of, but where was divine grace in keeping us healthy? Why wasn't God here keeping us healthy when we were worshiping him? The grace, it comes from within us. Again, it's not something that happens in those outer circumstances. It's not God coming down and changing the way the outer world works. He's not going to come and place a bubble of protection around this church because we're a church. The world still runs rampant, and the virus is still here, and we still have to interact with the world and all of the laws and the rules and the ways that the material world works in this dualistic reality. But the grace comes from that moment that we are able to acknowledge the need for strength in our life, and we are able to ask God for it. So in that circumstance that I'm referring to in this article that I read, the divine grace that needed to be called upon wasn't to say, come and protect us as we worship you. It was in that moment to say, God, give me the strength to change the way that I worship. Give me the strength to understand that right now we can't come together and gather. This is hard. I miss my friends. I miss my family. I miss singing to you in a group. But give me the strength. I invite you in. I open my heart to you. And give me the strength to acknowledge that now is not the time. This is not the moment. So that divine grace, it's not about asking for the outer circumstances to be different. Divine grace comes when we ask for the strength to change within ourselves. It's Sister Gianna Mata's prayer. Lord, change no circumstance in my life. Change me. This is the ability of divine grace to come in and change our lives. And as I said, of course, there are moments in everyone's lives where the outer circumstances change as well, and where divine intervention can come in and protect us. But what we should be calling on and what we need to be calling for when we're asking for that grace to enter into our lives is for the strength to acknowledge and to change our own consciousness. I was reading a little bit from The Essence of Self-Realization last night, and I came upon, it was the chapter of grace versus self-effort, and I came upon this quote from Yogananda that says, God doesn't need proprieting. So again, proprieting, that idea of just, if I do what's right and if I'm a good devotee, then of course God will protect me. Saying God doesn't need proprieting. His grace isn't based on personal likes or dislikes. It is true that he responds to the devotee's love, but that love too must be impersonal. It must be free of ego motivation. And this was a powerful thing for me when I came across it and was thinking about it, because how often when we're asking for divine intervention, when we're asking for God's grace to enter into a circumstance, is it because our ego is there? I had this experience just yesterday. A friend of mine made a decision, which it's been an interesting experience for me because contextually, I agree with everything that this person decided to do. I agree with the changes that she decided to make. And so from an intellectual standpoint, I could look and say, yes, I absolutely support what's happening. But in an emotional, from an emotional standpoint, it was a decision that ended up just hurting me. There was something in it. Hurting is too big a word. I was disappointed by a loss that I was going to face in the midst of this change that was happening. So something that I wanted to happen didn't. And again, it's been that interesting experience of being able to look on one hand at the context of, yes, I agree with this, this is the right decision, but then here are my emotions saying, well, no. And I went home and sort of threw a little fit for a couple of minutes and was, you know, arguing with my ego, this isn't fair, why can't it happen the way that I need it to? I asked for what I needed and here we are, it's not happening. I, me, in the midst of all of that. And as I was arguing with myself and reflecting on the choices that were being made and trying to find a way, you know, saying to myself, well, maybe the right thing to do is to have a conversation with this person. Maybe I should just go to him and tell him that what he did was hurtful. And this is where I'm standing in it. And these are my emotions. And this is what I need to feel to do in order to feel better. Because I can't change the outer circumstance, but I can make myself known. And I sat with it and invited God's grace in and started to ask, you know, what is the right thing to do in this circumstance? And I realized in the midst of that, that going to this person and talking to him about what had happened and the choice that had been made and explaining why I was frustrated and upset, the only thing that it was resolving, or the only thing that it was helping, was my ego. It was my ego that wanted to go and kick and scream and throw a little fit and cross my arms like a little kid throwing a tantrum and say, "This is not fair. My emotions are hurt and I feel unfair. I feel this was unfair." And so I decided instead, you know, well, let me just finish that thought. So I kept kind of running down that road a little bit and saying, what do you expect to get out of it? Let's say that you did go to this person and explain why their choices were hurtful to you. What do you expect to get out of it? And I realized that all the way at the end of that, when I could follow that thread all the way down, what I expected was for this person to say, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I see that I've hurt you. Let's change everything and make it all go back to the way it was before." So what I wanted was the intervention of divine grace to come in and change everything back to the way it was. That was rooted completely in my ego, which comes back to this comment here. God, you know, his grace isn't based on personal likes and dislikes. He responds to the devotee's love, but it must be impersonal. It must be free of ego motivation. How quickly the ego sneaks in and sneaks up on us and takes charge of our thoughts and our likes and our dislikes, and it can trick us. Here I was thinking that what I was going to do was be strong and enforce my will and my strength and stand up for what I thought was right and to explain my emotions and say, yes, I agree with everything that you're doing, but I still need you to know that I was hurt in this process. And it wasn't until I sat in meditation and followed that thread all the way down that I realized all of that wasn't true. That really, I wasn't going in to assert anything that was righteous or powerful. That I wasn't asking for divine intervention on behalf of my own personal growth. I was asking for divine intervention, God's grace to come in and change those circumstances. Boom, there I am, rooted right back in my ego. So instead, what I did this morning is I took the yamas and niyamas with me into my meditation. And I sat with this and I looked at my altar and I spoke to the guru, to the masters, to the gurus, and I said, I'm hurt. This is frustrating for me. I feel frustrated with this. Though I agree with it, I feel frustrated. And I said, let's go through the yamas and niyamas together. Because what are the yamas and niyamas? They are our recipe for bringing us back, or they're those reminders and character traits and practices that we can use to bring us closer to our true selves. When we're practicing the yamas and niyamas and bringing them into our actions and our thoughts and our desires, what we're beginning to do is peel away that outer shell that the ego has created that's pulling us this way and that in dualistic society. And we just piece by piece, through contentment, through nonviolence, through non-stealing, non-lying, we're just peeling those away, devotion, self-study. And what we find as we dig through those yamas and niyamas is that we're resonating more closely with that vibration that is truly ours. And in that moment, as I went through this and I took each one and I started at the top with ahimsa, with nonviolence, and I said, what are the ways that I'm being violent in this moment, either with myself, with this person, with the circumstances and just the universe in general? What are the ways that I'm lying and not being truthful? What are the ways that I'm taking something? I wanted circumstances to be different. I wanted it to be the way that I needed it to be because my ego was hurt. But when I could stand in that and say, well, if I demand from the universe, from divine intervention, from this person, whomever it may be, that things go back to the way they were, I'm taking something away from, you know, the shift that's happening and the new people that are going to be involved in that. And so I went through each of the yamas and niyamas step by step, and I just offered each one into this situation and this problem, this issue. And at the end of it, there was so much peace, there was calmness, there was stillness. And it doesn't mean that the hurt didn't go away. It doesn't mean that the issue wasn't resolved. There's still that little part of the ego that's tugging and saying, but wait a minute, we don't feel good about this. But the strength of inviting the divine into that moment and saying, I need your strength and I need your help to grow. I need divine grace and to come into this moment and help me to uplift my consciousness. Well, then that's when the divine is ready to just rush in willingly with all of the love and all of the support and all of the joy that we could never even imagine. With all of that strength of infinity, the moment that we can lift up our eyes and say, I need your help, that's where divine grace comes in. That's where we begin to see the work and the effort change. If we come out and we just pray, Divine Mother, please make this person no longer be sick. Divine Mother, please let me get this job. Divine Mother, please, whatever it may be, those outward circumstances, the divine isn't as ready and willing to jump in and change that, because it's not about what's happening on the outside. It's about what's happening for us on the inside. So instead of saying, Divine Mother, please make this person not be sick, or Divine Mother, please let me get this job, what if we said, Divine Mother, give me the strength to accept whatever circumstances occur next. Divine Mother, give me the strength to love this person with all of my heart and help them to feel you in these last or in these moments of struggle, whatever it may be. That's the power of divine grace. That's what we are asking for when we are praying to God to help to change our lives, to help us to grow. Everything is about our own personal spiritual growth. It's not about what's happening on the outside. That's the divine lila. That's the play that's just moving past us. And those circumstances are set for us to help us to grow. So the grace comes not in praying for the outer worldly circumstance to change, but in that prayer of Sister Gyanamata. Change no circumstance in my life, Lord. Change only me. I came across one other little story. This is from an article that Swami Kriyananda wrote on, again, grace versus self-effort. And it was just a perfect example of what we're talking about today. So I'll read this in closing and just wrap up with us today. So this is Swami Kriyananda. Many people ask what the relationship is between grace and self-effort. Paramahansa Yogananda once scolded his disciple for light-mindedness. You keep others rollicking all the time. As a devotee of God, you should be more serious. It is all right to laugh occasionally, but try even then to keep your mind inwardly calm. I know my fault, said the disciple, but how can I change without your blessings? Well, the guru replied, my blessings are there already. God's blessings are there. It is your blessings that are needed. How often people ask God for his blessings, but what a rare few stop to consider the part they themselves play in attracting those blessings. Grace is like sunlight on the side of a building, shining impersonally. When Paramahansa Yogananda came to the West, we just celebrated last week our here in Palo Alto, our 100th anniversary in celebration of Yogananda coming to the West. And we mentioned a few times throughout the day Yogananda being called the father of yoga in the West. And when Yogananda came to the West and brought these teachings with us, they are not passive. This path is not about passivity. It is about intense energy and activity and willpower. Everything that we do is about giving all of ourselves as devotee into the desire to grow and to change. and asking for divine grace in our lives and opening our hearts to receive divine grace in our lives is no different. It takes all of our energy and our strength and our effort. We're so quick, as Swami Kriyananda explains in this little story, to pray and ask for God's blessings. But how often do we get to stop and say, what role am I playing in helping to receive those blessings? How am I opening my heart? How am I standing in front of my altar, kneeling in front of my altar, saying, what can I do to change today? Or when that's too hard, to say, Divine Mother, I know I need to change, but I need your help to do it. Rather than praying for the outer circumstance, we pray for that change to come within ourselves, which is why Yogananda can say to us that one of the highest prayers we can pray is, I will reason, I will, and I will act, but guide thou my reason, will, and activity toward the highest good in all. Divine grace is always there, just as the analogy or the simile that Swami Kriyananda uses here. It's the sunlight shining on a building impersonally. At any moment, we have that opportunity to draw it in, to and to use it to change, to grow. And all we need to do is ask, open our hearts and ask for that. But it takes our energy and our effort. It takes our willingness to look at ourselves and say, what is it that I can do differently to change this circumstance? And while it may not bring about the outer changes that we're hoping for. Just like I said to you, I could sit in meditation this morning and go through each of the yamas and niyamas with the circumstance that's been painful for me or this decision that's been painful for me. It doesn't mean that at the end of that, the pain was gone or the frustration was gone, but I was left with that feeling of peace and calmness and assurance and acceptance that helps me to know all I need to do is lean deeper into the divine. All I need to do is lean deeper into my practices and my techniques. That's why we have them. Each of these things that Yogananda has brought us help us to attune our vibration on those subtle levels to that divine consciousness. And this is where divine grace comes. It doesn't come from saying, protect me because I am worshiping you as I sing in my church temple with hundreds of other people. It comes in that moment when we can say, this is hard. I want to be with my congregation, but help me find the strength to do what I know is right. God bless you.